Welcome once again to Word on the Hills, with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host, Wyn Scheltemer, and our guest this week, Ray Herbert. Each week, we visit with authors, editors, or publishers who have regional or local connections. We hope to find out a little about their lives, what prompts them to write, and we give them an opportunity to read some of their work for us. We're very pleased to have Ray Herbert with us today. Welcome, Ray.
Hi, glad to be here.
Ray Herbert has published a memoir, a novel, and some short stories. He is currently working on a collection of his short fiction. He says that he has two styles, humorous and gritty, but that he really likes writing funny stories better. He's also a well-known entertainer in his hometown of Brighton and the surrounding area. He and his partner, Ralph de Jong, are a singing guitar-playing duo. Ray has sung all his life and strummed his first guitar at the age of 20, playing only in the living room until he met Ralph. He mounted the stage 5 years ago to join his very experienced musical partner, and now they are always in demand. So, Ray, have you written all your life as well as sung?
No, actually, I started writing only 10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
I had been busy working and raising a family and all those things that keep you busy, and I didn't have the time. My first writing actually was when I was just a kid in high school. I moved to the big city of Sudbury. I had been a country boy, and I felt quite out of place, and being a teen, wanted to, you know, fit in. And we had an assignment, writing assignment in my English class, and my story was so good that the teacher read it for the whole class, which I found out later was unprecedented. And I was a big hit, and so that kind of fell in the back of my head, I guess, as a memory. And 50 years later, when I retired and had time to write, I started to do it in earnest.
So, was that first story a funny one?
Yes, it was, yes.
I've heard you tell stories about your youth. What do you enjoy about writing creative nonfiction? Could you tell us a little about your memoir? And do you find it hard to draw a line between fiction and nonfiction?
Yes, I actually do. My memoir, that's why I like writing it. And the title of it kind of says it all, The Way It Was, Sort of. In other words, I'm warning you that I've fudged it a little bit. It's creative nonfiction. I told the truth, but I embellished it a little bit. And as Farley Mowat said, never let the facts get in the way of a good story. So that's
good advice.
That's kind of my motto.
Yes. So tell us a little bit about your memoir. Does it deal with just a few years in your life or a particular
basically, it's in two segments. It's my time from I was, I guess, about 4 years old to the time I was 16, and then I leave a gap out of that in sort of uneventful years, and then I move on to my young adulthood when I met and married my wife and our adventures in the wilds of Mono Township.
But really?
So there's two different sets of stories, but they're all basically just goofy stories of my missteps in life, and I'm not afraid to laugh at myself, and I have given myself plenty to laugh about.
Okay. So you obviously enjoy storytelling.
Yes, it is. That's how it got started, actually. People heard me tell these goofy stories and said, well, why don't you write about it? So I kind of did.
Yes, and now, do you write your stories with performance in mind?
Not really. I kind of, very, very recently, I read one of my short stories at a group where the moderator was also a screenwriter and a playwright. And he loved this story because it was mostly dialogue. And he said, this would make a great little play if you had more of these kind of stories in perhaps a string of them, and you could make up a small play for maybe just two actors or whatever. And so with that in mind, I have, in fact, written a second story with the same characters in that, with the idea that maybe it would be performed someday. But this is all in its infancy. I really haven't pursued it so far too much, but it's a thought that kind of appeals to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've also written songs in recent years. What are the challenges in doing that?
Hardest thing I've ever tried to write. Songs and poetry, as you well know, are one and the same thing almost. And I have a reputation, and well-deserved, of being an anti-poet. I don't get it. And all my writing friends give me this condescending look and say, you just don't get it. Well, that's true, I don't. So when I try to write songs, they're all very quick to remind me, oh, now you're writing poetry. Well, I know. And so I take a good deal of ribbing about that. But it is hard. And it's because when I write, I can, you know, there's no word limit. I can just keep writing. But in a song, you have to tell your whole story in 16 lines in a chorus, perhaps. You know, you don't get a lot. Mm-hmm. And I'm not good at being precise. I guess that's part of the reason why I'm not good at poetry. I've written a few songs, and most of them are ballads. And ballads, as you know, tell a story. And to tell the story that succinctly with only a few lines of dialogue, you might call it, it's tough for me.
Do you start with the music?
Generally, yes. And generally, my partner, Ralph DeJong, writes the music. He was part of a writing team for many years before we ever met. And they produced, him and his partner produced a lot of songs. And for the most part, they broke it down that the partner wrote the lyrics and Ralph wrote the tune. And so that's what the kind of the pattern that he and I have kind of fallen into in a very limited way. Although we both do some of the other. But I find it easier if he gives me a tune to work from, and then I can fit the words into that cadence and whatnot of the tune.
Right, right.
It helps me. Yeah. Now, if I were an experienced songwriter, perhaps that wouldn't be a problem, but I am definitely not experienced in that regard. But I certainly hope to pursue it. It's very creative.
Yeah.
It truly is.
Yeah. So, Ray, how about reading to us from one of your stories, from your memoir?
Sure, I can do that. Again, these are just little vignettes. The whole memoir is a series of little vignettes, and they're arranged basically in a chronological order. And this is a story about when I was, I think I was 13 at this time. I call this one In Days of Old, O-L-D-E. I think it was the summer I was 13 that some pals and I saw the movie Ivanhoe. We all thought it was great adventure, action, violence, and mayhem, but the best part by far were the jousting scenes. The spectacle of two knights in flashy costumes and shining armor, astride huge, powerful horses with flaring nostrils, thundering hooves, charging each other, aiming long lances at their opponent's chest, thrilled our bloodthirsty hearts. Boy, we should do that, I shouted. It'd be fun. What are you talking about, said Joe. We don't have horses or lances or any of that stuff. Well, we'll improvise, I said, undiscouraged. I had always had more imagination than good sense, so for me it was not much of a stretch to substitute bicycles for horses and long sticks cut from the bush for lances. The armor, of course, was another matter. No problem, I said. We'll just pretend we're wearing armor. And so our adventure in medieval wonderland of the imagination began. Now picture this. Facing each other from about 50 yards, we would rest a 6 or 8 foot stick across the handlebars of our bikes while we pedaled like mad to attain maximum charging speed. As we sat back down on the seat, we gripped the bars with our left hand while raising our makeshift lances with our right hand. All the time, we're still pedaling like maniacs to make our attack speed and hit at maximum force. Does it occur to us that we could easily impale our friend? Or that we could be the impalee? Or that you'll take your eye out, kid? Nah, we were young and stupid. Nothing could hurt us. So forward we raced, as fast and furious as our skinny legs would propel us. We hurtled toward the contact zone and wham! Our wounds were surprisingly minor, considering. Bruised ribs, scraped elbows, bloodied noses, torn shirts. Still, it caused us to have secret second thoughts on the odds against our escaping with our lives in future confrontations. These unspoken fears made both Joe and me more cunning in our attack strategies for our upcoming battles with our other pals. Oh yeah, it's lots of fun, Bob. You'll see. Let's do it, I encouraged Bob Peterkin, a somewhat reluctant opponent. Well, okay, replied Bob. I guess I can beat you. Let's go. Bob's confidence stemmed mostly from the fact that he was 2 years my senior and 25 pounds heavier. These facts were not unnoticed by me. To tip the odds in my favor, and remembering the wounds suffered in my initial encounter with Joe, I had come up with a plan, devious and cunning, clever and crafty, that would ensure my victory against this larger, but, I secretly thought, dumber adversary. We mounted our bikes facing each other at the prescribed distance and screaming, "Victory is mine!" we charged. On approaching the contact point, at the last second, I leaned forward as far as I could and, lowering my pole, drove it into the front wheel of Bob's bike. The front wheel of his bike stopped instantly. The back, not so much. It did, however, fly high into the air, catapulting Bob, yelling, "Oh, shit!" several yards past our contact point into the gravel and grunge of the ditch. Meanwhile, as the attacking end of my lance mangled the spokes of Bob's front wheel, My end of it shot upwards, while at the same time sideways at Mach 1 speed. Far too fast for me to duck out of its way, it struck me full force dead center of my forehead. Spread-eagled in midair, I sailed for about 10 feet before skidding to a painful stop in the gravel on the opposite ditch to Bob. Judging from our assorted wounds, it was hard to know who was the victor and who was the vanquished. Both of us limped home, bloodied and bruised, dragging our mangled bodies and bikes, Bob cursing me all the way for wrecking his bike. As the summer progressed, further jousting contests among the pals became much less harmful to bodies, but much more destructive to bikes. The lance and the front wheel gambit became the accepted norm. But of course, improvements were bound to follow. To ensure victory and avoid injury, some bright guy came up with the throw the lance from 10 feet ploy. Usually this trick resulted in merely maiming the opponent knight's front wheel, but sometimes if the combative juices were flowing, especially high, the lance would found its target in the enemy's body. The resulting wounds from the dastardly deed had to be avenged, of course. This, in turn, often resulted in bruised faces, bruised knuckles, and bruised egos. It was all in good fun, though, believe it or not, and no permanent damage, either physical or emotional, was done. However, we all spent a good deal of our time that summer straightening and or replacing front wheels and spokes in our bikes. Ah, the good old days.
Wow, that was scary. I don't think kids have that freedom nowadays to do these crazy things.
My grandson read this book when he was 14, and he said, "Papa, I don't know how you're still alive." That's true. There's lots of stories even sillier than that. I mean, you're indestructible when you're that young, and you're too stupid to know to be afraid. Now you couldn't, with a gun to my head, I wouldn't do those things.
Well, thank you very much, Ray. That was great. We've been talking to Ray Herbert, but now we'll take a short break before resuming our conversation.